Who do you want to be as a leader? What are the blind spots you're missing? If you had a magic wand and you could change anything about your workplace, what would you do with it? These are the kinds of questions we explore on Inspirational Leadership. I'm your host, Kristen Harcourt. I'm a keynote speaker, emotional intelligence coach, and leadership trainer who partners with executives and emerging leaders who want to achieve extraordinary results for themselves and their organizations. You're in the right place if you're ready to cultivate the self-awareness to be the leader you were born to be. Let's go on this journey together. Welcome to Inspirational Leadership. I'm your host, Kristen Harcourt, and I'm very, very happy to introduce you to another fabulous guest. Today, I am going to be speaking with Viva Asmalash, she/her. She is a passionate workplace consultant and certified inclusion strategist specializing in forward-thinking employee engagement, equity-centered strategic planning, values-driven branding, and critical team conversations. Viva's professional purpose is to create environments where people feel truly seen and are inspired to be the best, most authentic selves. She often facilitates inclusive executive group coaching, delivers engaging keynotes and panel discussions, and crafts org-wide education experiences for clients like, I always want to say IDEO, MIQ, and Reading Partners. As a co-founder of Liberation Labs, she proudly co-designed the first of its kind culturally aware feedback training. She also co-authored the viral 2023 Harvard Business Review article, Creating Psychological Safety for Black Women at Your Company. Welcome to the show, Viva.
Thank you so much, Kristen. Happy to be here.
I don't know why every time I want to say IDEO instead of IDEO.
It is IDEO, actually.
Is it IDEO? Okay. I am saying, because I always wanted to say, I want to say IDEO because it makes me think of ideas when I hear the word IDEO.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so IDEO I am saying it right.
Is an arm of IDEO. Absolutely. So okay. You're all set.
Good. So welcome to the show. As a starting point, Viva, I always like to give everyone an opportunity to learn a little bit more about you and your story and your journey and what got you to this work you're doing in the world.
Yes, absolutely. Wow. Well, where to be? How much time do you all have? Now, I'm a Taurus. Yes. Absolutely. Well, first off, thank you so much for just making this space and doing the work that you do in the world. I'm really appreciative of that, and just bringing different representations of inspirational leadership, I think, is so valuable. So what do I do? So maybe I'll start with what I do and then talk a little bit about how I got here. So I have now co-founded Liberation Labs with my business partner, Michael Greger, and we are most passionate about helping organizations find concrete ways to weave equitable and inclusive practices into their everyday life at work, right? I think that so often this work is, when we're talking about diversity, equity, inclusion work, justice work within the workplace, belonging, it feels like these efforts are so challenging to sustain within organizations. And that's because leaders aren't aligned on what the needs are. They struggle to see the connection in their relationship to their daily work. And so we help them to integrate these principles and help them to see those connections in everything from their mission, values, strategic planning, and then just through every every function of their organization. So things like manager training and development, employee onboarding, retreats and engagement, strategic planning. And so that's what we love to do. That's what we're really passionate about. And of course, we do some dedicated DEI strategic work and assessment and things like that as well. How did I arrive here is kind of a long story. I've always really been intrigued by and rather good at seeing the connections that other people might miss. Really interested in understanding what motivates someone to take an action of some kind. And so for a long time, that was dedicated to front-end people operations. I did a lot of work in employer brand, high-volume recruitment strategy. And so even while at the time when my work was really focused on like the front end of things, I always made it my business to pay attention to and have an impact on all stages of employee experience, because I wanted to make sure that there was consistency between the image that I was crafting for people and what they would actually experience when they were hired into our workplace. And I like to just call myself a nosy Rosie anyway. So even when things weren't like under my job description, I always had questions about like, tell me more about this area. And I just paid attention to and understand the nuances that come with having diverse identities in the workplace, especially marginalized identities, right? And so myself, I'm first generation Eritrean American. My family's emigrated here from East Africa. My mom was, about 6 months pregnant with me when she came to the States. And I'm the only one of my immediate family members that was born here. So I've always sort of had an awareness, and a lens that was shaped by all of these experiences, right? So I think that there is a particularly unique experience that Black immigrant families have in this country of being an immigrant, obviously, to an entirely new land, but at the same time, then being sort of on the edge of the spectrum when it comes to privilege based on skin color, right? Which is something they did not likely experience in the same way in their home country. So that has always been something that has been sort of weaving its way through my entire experience and shapes the work that I do now.
Yeah.
And lastly, I'll share just from a personal perspective, because it informs so much of my work, that I've also had the really unique responsibility of supporting multiple family members through health journeys, right? Which has really illuminated the dire need for anti-racism work in our healthcare and in our legal systems. And it's what's really led me to being a super active, advocate for mental health within the workplace, or out in the community. And so I really see my purpose being like the intersection of all of those things.
Yeah, it's so interesting to see how you get there, how all of these different things on your chapter, how they all come together. But I'm sure you wouldn't have been able to predict 10 years ago this is where you would be. But then when you look back, it's like, of course, you can see all of those connections.
The
And
moments, right?
it's interesting, even from the employee experience perspective, I really connect with the kind of the frontline recruitment. I remember when I was doing a lot of work in talent management, and organizations were saying, we want to have high potentials, we want to have high performers, we want to have the best people working for us. And I kept on saying, that's great. Like, there's things that you can do, but like, what are you doing for when the people get into the company? Like, what are your leaders like? And how are you coaching and developing them so that when your high potentials and high performers come into the organization, they're being supported, they're feeling meaning and purpose and all of that in their work? And I can't tell you how many times, that's nice, but we don't want to talk about that part. We just want to get the people in the door. And that's where I just kept on hearing this over and over again. And I felt so called to be able to help with more of that work, to be able to make those changes in the organization. And I'm sure you experienced this from your end. And I was kind of smiling as you said the employee experience piece, because I can even think of where in the interview they'd say all these things and all the right things. And then the person would get in the door and they'd say, nope, very big disconnection here. And you think to yourself, I'm sorry, like what are you trying to achieve there? Because then when they come and see it's not what you say it is, they're not going to stay.
Exactly. And that becomes even more true when we talk about folks with marginalized identities too, right? It's like, okay, so you put this picture of this Black woman on your website, or the this Asian American, person on your site, but there's this like major disconnect. If you're not investing in what the experience is going to be, then how p that people get so hyper focused on the diversity part of DEI. It's like, oh, just hired diverse populations, right? Or we just made a diversity hire. First of all, one person cannot be diverse, right? Like that, maybe that's a podcast topic for another day, but I just want everyone to be very aware of how they even just use the word diverse or diversity. But becoming so hyper focused on just the diversity piece without paying any mind or any attention or truly investing, right, in the hard work of rebuilding culture so that they are more equitable, That's the other piece of the disconnect here. And people are not seeing the statistical results that they want to see because they aren't investing in their culture first and then everything else that comes from that.
Absolutely. And that's what I wanted to talk a lot about. And I was really, really intrigued by your article with HBR. And I'm just going to repeat the name of the title of the article, Creating Psychological Safety for Black Women at Your Company. So tell me more about the themes that emerged in that work. And I would suggest everyone listening, I will definitely have the link to the article in the show notes. But for listeners that are, this might be the first time they're hearing about this, and it went viral for a good reason. Tell me more about the themes that emerged in this research and work in this article that you co-wrote.
Absolutely. Well, first, let me. I always want to name my brilliant co-author without whom this article would not have been possible. And her name is Agatha Agbanobi. And Agatha and I started having these conversations around the fact that, a lot of times when these concepts emerge, things like, however many years ago when Lean In came out and everybody was buzzing about that concept of leaning in. Same with Brené Brown's work around vulnerability, right? There are these concepts that are raised in the workplace. And what it does is really kind of shines a light on the fact that, yes, we should be talking about these things and that there are distinct nuances for different populations, right? And so that always feels like that's the layer that's missing in a lot of these mainstream conversations. And why it's so important to always have that identity lens on these different topics is because when these conversations are happening, that's where decisions are made, right? And so if we don't have that lens to say, okay, this actually impacts different people in really different ways, then the people most in need of a lot of these changes are left out of that process, right? So that was the same with psychological safety and the concept that Amy Edmondson has done an amazing job at Harvard of shining so much light on. And at the same time, how does race impact our path, our differentiated pathways to psychological safety? So that's what Agatha and I wanted to dig into and raise in this article. And first and foremost, more than anything, when we were writing this, what we set out to do was to imagine a Black woman reading this article and for her to feel seen, validated, heard by what she read in that article. And so that was of the utmost importance to us. And then the second component was that we wanted to shift the conversation from, a lot of times these articles really focus on individual actions and the things that individuals can do. And while that's important because individuals make up organizations, right? It's also important to start teaching people how to be thinking about things through the lens of systems and structures and making systemic change. And so we wanted to put the onus on organizations to start making concrete steps towards deeper psychological safety for all populations, most importantly, those that are the most marginalized in the workplace. And we wanted there to be some really meaty statistical information and research to back that up. So there's a lot of data that's referenced in the first part of the article that can help kind of give that historical context around much of what we're talking about.
Yeah, and so what are some of those things that immediately come up for you? And of course, you go into a lot more detail in the article that might not be really enough thought is given into this when you start to think about how psychological safety would be experienced by a Black woman.
Sure. So one of the things that we, well, I st want to start here because pay equity is, we know, such a topic and something that needs to be so much attention needs to be paid to that. Because how can we say that we're an organization that is committed to equity and inclusion and we see such gaps when we start looking at compensation? So really put your money where your mouth is, right? And start looking at pay equity. But I would use that as an example. I would use the example of, manager training and development. Like how much, and this is why we do so much of the work we do at Liberation Labs, like how much better would it be if organizations were not doing this sort of corrective work around teaching people later in their careers how to not commit microaggressions or repair microaggression, but start teaching them at the outset and the early part of their career, what it means to lead diverse teams, right? Moving from cultural confidence to cultural humility is something that we want to talk to people a lot about. So there's this idea of manager training and development and having a new set of standards, right? We can't really continue to leave. One of the things we say in the articles, we can't leave it to chance, the experience that a Black woman has, based on just who she happens to get as a manager, right? There's also this piece in here. First of all, HR departments do, I worked in people ops for so long, and so HR is like near and dear to my heart. And at the same time, HR departments is not an easy place to be because they are a lot of times, I always say like the moral compass within an organization. And often they put in a position where they have to protect the well-being of the organization when really it should be the other way around, right? And like protecting the best interests of each individual employee. And we know that that's just not how things happen in so many workplaces. So yeah, just moving it from a one-to-one solution to really thinking about systemic change.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's, I say this for any time someone's getting into leadership, you don't know what you don't know, right? So if we can have people right at the beginning as they're becoming leaders, because let's be honest, just being a leader in general, going from an individual contributor to being a leader is, oh, all of a sudden I'm responsible and need to be supporting and coaching, developing all these other humans. And guess what? All of these different humans are different personalities and have different needs. And from a diversity, equity, and inclusion lens, they also are different. Different lived experiences on all of that kind of stuff. So I think it lends itself so well to, in general, all organizations really need to be supporting emerging leaders as they start to go into leadership, but making sure a huge component of that is what you're talking about here, helping them understand what does it look like to support different people with different needs, different cultures, different ways that they're experiencing things that they can't know until they get educated on around all of these different things. And I think this is a huge, huge gap in many, many organizations in terms of training for new leaders.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's so true. And I even, sometimes well, not to be all in your business, Kristen. I don't know what your dating, history has been or was, but a lot of times when we start dating someone, it's like the realization that they didn't just arrive on your doorstep. Like they've lived this whole life before they came to you with a lot of other relationships and things that they have experienced, childhood, all of these different things before they get to being right in front of you, right? But all of that impacts the way that you two are able to connect, forge relationship, work together, right? All of that is true when in a working relationship too, right? So I always use this example. If you've been told, if every time you ask a question or have a difference of a dissenting opinion, you have been told that you're so smart for having that opinion, you're brilliant for thinking outside the box, good on you for being creative, which we know is most often the white male experience in this country, right? And on the flip side, if you have every time you had a difference of opinion, you told that that was problematic, that you were talking out of turn, being sent, to the principal's office because you're acting out, right? Which we know, because the data shows, is the experience of Black children in classrooms all across this country, right? You can understand then how those experiences become compounded when you find yourself in a workplace, right? So why would you step out and have a dissenting opinion if every time you do, you're told that you are complaining or that you're being negative? So it's really understanding all of that historical context and having an awareness around it. And frankly, unless you're willing to do that, you shouldn't be calling yourself a leader. You shouldn't be in a leadership position unless you are willing to approach it with that sense of cultural humility of what you said of, you don't know what you don't know and what is missing from your lens that can make you better, that can make you a more well-rounded, and equitable and inclusive leader. So those are just some of the things that people can be thinking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And would you say also from, and I know you said definitely the systemic piece, but do you think also it would be in the organization's best interest to also have more support available to Black women so that they also feel like they can figure out what it looks like for them to feel more comfortable using their voice and being able to share since they have been conditioned all of these years where it was they were told not to, and they can't just be told, oh, sure, like this is a place where everybody's voice can be everybody's voice can be heard and shared, where they don't have that same psychological safety because of everything that they've experienced. From your perspective, would you like to see organizations specifically investing in development, coaching resources for this group?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. And I would say, investing in one's future in their skill set. The most important piece is not coming at it from this like paternalistic standpoint of here's what we think you should do, right? But listening to people in terms of like what they think is going to be most valuable for their growth and development, and then co-creating a plan from there, right? And people having agency in developing the plan that most impacts them, because we know that people are not, right? Black people, Black women are not a monolith, right? That everybody has a different set of needs. So that's the most important thing I would say is like yes to the investment, and also, be mindful of how you're going about that.
Right, because you can't make assumptions. What that person needs is not what you might think they need. You need to be asking questions around what actually is going to serve them and not make those assumptions, because I can't tell you how many times those assumptions were not accurate.
Exactly. And, there's this, I think time is an interesting thing to explore through a cultural lens, like our relationship to time and like false senses of urgency and response times within communication. Just all there are all these different layers to it when we think about it, in the sense of the workplace. But, it's okay to ask people what they think they might need and let them know that they can come back to you in 2 weeks, a month, 6 months, 3 months when they have more clarity around it for themselves, right? Because if you have when there have been very few experiences in your life where you have been asked what your what your opinion is on something, how it's been very rare for you to feel empowered from an employer. That takes some getting used to, and it takes some time to see to build trust in what someone is asking you. So, like making space for that, I think is also important. Like, yes, ask people to share with you, and also like make that more of an open door, so it doesn't need to be that sort of like immediate, jump off point.
Well, I talk a lot about this when it comes to constructive feedback as well, where a leader might be saying, tell me what I can do more of and how I can support you. And I said, like, ask that one time, two time, three time, four times. You can't stop asking it because previously people might have asked them that same question, but then they answered that question and they didn't want to hear what they answered. So until that trust is created that you actually want to hear and you're going to do something with
Exactly.
it, and there's not going to be any retaliation because you're sharing openly. If you really want to create that trust, it's showing that consistency and letting them know, like, okay, if there's nothing for you right now, keep on giving some thought to it. If there's something that does come up for you, the doors are always open. I'd love to hear from you. It
Exactly.
feels like the same thing you're saying around the development piece, because they might identify, actually, I think I would want more of this, but they need time and space to be able to, first of all, figure out what that is. And do you really have my back? Like, do you actually want to hear the answer to this question?
That's absolutely it, right? And a lot of what we're talking about here, that's why, sometimes people think about DEI work as being this like siloed work. It's really like, we talk about this. It's like when you are making things better for, or how do I want to say this? When you are paying more attention to improving your policies with the most marginalized in mind, you inevitably make things better for everybody else at the same time. And so that's also an important thing for people to be aware of as DEI departments are getting cut, as budgets are being slashed, as we're seeing, the injustices in terms of like legislative components that are being, you know, rolled back and all these different things. It's like this is not just, this doesn't just affect a few people, right? Even if it did, we should be paying attention to it, but that's not the case. It affects every single one of us, in ways that we may not be aware of.
Absolutely. So the name of the show is Inspirational Leadership. And I'm curious on your end, when you start to think about inspiring leaders and how they're showing up in our workplaces, what comes up for you?
Inspiring leaders. This is such a good question. When I think about the people that are the most inspiring, it's actually maybe not what most people think of. It's people that really are committed to and dialed into their own evolution and everything that comes with that. It's I think so important for people to understand that each of us are obviously on a journey of learning and becoming better. And like, as we're learning, as we're evolving, how are we then modeling that to others? I think, and bringing others into that is the thing that I'm always appreciative of leaders in my life. Think about
Yeah,
it.
I love that answer. I think that I think 100%. If I think about an inspiring leader, they are somebody who is constantly investing in their growth and development and recognizing it's something that you're never done. It's never finished. It's never complete. It's evolving, which I really appreciate that word. And as they're doing that, there's, I think, a humility that comes along with that too, around sharing where, you know, previously they might have had struggles and how they're learning through those struggles and how they're doing things differently and being able to. I found the leaders who have been very inspiring to me as you're sharing this as well. There has been that level of vulnerability that they realize that they're valuable and they don't have it all figured out and they're figuring out as they go along. But sharing that with others, which also gives them permission to, okay, you are going to make mistakes. But that's part of the journey, but you're still working towards putting yourself out there and making those mistakes in order to continue to evolve.
Yes, exactly. And then how do you, like I said, like inviting other people into that, like in the ways that you're talking about, but also like sharing the stage, quote unquote, sharing the mic. Like I think that's so important too. One of the questions years ago, I was organizing a panel at a previous workplace, and one of the questions that we asked is, what is something that you used to think, and how do you think about it differently now? And I think if more leaders were like asking themselves that question and then being willing to talk about it in front of others, I think that's really what we're talking about here, because people so often think that they need to have the perfect answer all of the time. And especially when it comes to topics of inclusion and equity, and I think it becomes even more important to be willing and open to saying, like, here's what I'm learning. Here's how it's impacting the way I approach my work. And here's why ultimately it's for our greater good, right? And for us to be as an organization more in line with our values. So there's a lot in there. And I think, you know, even the word leader, I think, is one that we could spend a lot of time unpacking, because what does it mean to be a leader? What makes someone a leader? Is it the power that you have? Is it decision-making power? Is it like, I want us to, as just a society, become even more conscious of like the words that we use and how we're using them, and the picture that comes to mind when we think about who is a leader, right? What are they dressed like? What are they wearing? You know, there are all these, we don't realize it, but we have all of these preconceived ideas about what it means to be a certain thing. So I think people who are willing to have those conversations are maybe lead. Those are the leaders. No, but that's something just to be, you know, mindful of too.
Absolutely. I even just pay attention to those days, those moments where I say manager or boss or leader, like why are those different words being used? And when you start, I talk all the time about how even, of course, there's leadership in terms of title and influence and things like that, but I actually believe every single one of us are leaders in terms of how we show up to everything, how we show up to our
Definitely.
community, to our families, to in our workplaces. We have an opportunity to decide what we want that to look like and
I
how we
love
want to
that.
define leadership and who we're being. Because I think there's can be so much emphasis on what you're doing, but not
Yes.
enough emphasis on who you're being. And it feels like that's what we're talking about here too, because if you think about who you're being, you're constantly taking a step back and challenging yourself. Like, I don't know about you, like I discover beliefs every day that I'm like, where did this belief even come from? This isn't even my belief. Like this, I don't even know. Like as you start to uncover it, yet it's operating so strongly in the background without even with me not even realizing it in an unconscious way. But then you start to recognize, oh wow. Okay, do is this my truth? Not really, but it's something that I've been operating with as if it was. And how many other ones are back there that I don't even realize that are operating unconsciously?
That's it. That's it. And I, as you know, became a mom just within this past year. And so that experience provides many opportunities to think about just how we react to certain questions and way, like you said, long held beliefs that we didn't even know were there. Our knee jerk reaction to things that people say to us, especially I think as women, and because I have a daughter, I'm thinking a lot about that. Like all types of things, like my relationship to my body, or just like how we're talking about and showing up for ourselves. So I appreciate it when you framed it that way. And I appreciate that question.
And tell me, so I know what an inspiring leader looks like. I'm curious if there have been some leaders in your world who jump out at you that have really been that. So this is those opportunities where you can have a shout out for a leader who really had an impact on you in terms of how they showed up.
Well, in the spirit of what we were just talking about, I want to shout out my dang self, Like, I mean, I think, I don't know if you saw a couple of years ago, or not years ago, a couple of months ago, the actress Niecy Nash Butts, she won an Emmy. And did you see her speech when
I
she
love
said,
it.
she said, I want to thank myself, And when she did that, every muscle in my body like reacted, and afterwards, she was asked in an interview, why she said that. And what she said was something that I think about a lot, which is because I'm the only one that knows what it cost me. And that just rings so true for me, and I'm sure it does for a lot of people. Like there have just been so many situations in my life, many of which I was kind of talking about earlier when I was talking about experiences I've had with my family, that no one will ever understand because they're not in my shoes, right? They will never understand like the magnitude of it. And when I say the magnitude of it, that's navigating the care for someone with a mental illness for the over the course of 2 decades, right? Losing my brother to complications from diabetes in 2021, and then needing to keep that truth from my mom because she was ailing in health and not knowing how that news would impact her, right? Managing my mom's care for her to be a woman, a Black woman with an accent who's an immigrant, right? And then an aging Black woman on top of all of these things, and who in the last years of her life was in a wheelchair, right? And so what does that look like to be an advocate for her in those like final, handful of years of her life? That is her being in the really like last, couple of months, and then me giving birth to a baby and her passing away 3 weeks later. That these are like so many things that have happened, right? Through me launching a business, having a, starting to create a family and all of this. And I don't say all of that to glorify trauma or I don't say all of that for like self-pity or any of those things either. It's just really to say that in all of that, I loved myself through every single thing. Like I never turned on myself. I still showed up for myself. I never abandoned myself, right? Or my values or what was important to me or my family, right? So through every heartbreak, through every death, through every hard situation, there was a luckily for me, there was a new morning on the other end, and like,
Yeah.
what was I going to make of that? And so part of a lot of that was like loving myself through a lot of mistakes. And I'm going to get emotional talking about it, but even just that in and of itself is, I think, so important for people to learn to do. Like when we are re-scrolling social media comments and we see all these people lashing out at one another, it's like, are they just not loving themselves through their own mistakes, through their own hurt, through their own experiences? So that to me was like something that I am so proud of, that not that I didn't make any mistakes, because I made a lot, but that I still kept myself close to
Yeah.
those mistakes, and held myself accountable at the same time. And I think to me, that's what inspirational leadership is. It's like, we're going to mess up, but how can we still try to get at the best of who we are? And the best of who we are is no good unless it's like extends to other people, and the people who most need it is the other piece. But yeah, and I'll also say that, like, obviously, or maybe not obviously, but I am the amalgamation of all of the other amazing leaders and people that I've had the opportunity to like come from. First of all, my ancestors, and also the people I've been able to work with, right? And those have been a couple of supervisors that I do want to give a shout out to, named Mimi Gordon and Diana Lee, who both in very different ways shaped, helped to shape my lens.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how I'm thinking about that.
Oh, like my heart hearing that answer, Viva. Like, I think, first of all, there was a quote, and I don't know how the quote goes, and I'm not going to try to say it right now and butcher it, but it was around not abandoning yourself, right? How often, especially women, can abandon ourselves through all of that, right? And I think it's just for everybody listening, and there's going to be men and women who need to hear, or whatever gender you identify as, are going to hear this. And I want you to really, really hear what Viva said. I've had so many people on the podcast, and I've never had anyone give that answer. I was getting goosebumps as you were sharing, and then also sharing that video of the speech, because I remember the same thing when I heard that speech. I think I watched it 4 or 5 times over and over again, and the goosebumps that I got, and then how we're talking about again the goosebumps to me when that happens. I just know that's my soul and my inner knowing, just like it's like, listen to what's saying, remind that's a reminder to you right now. So I want everyone who's listening right now, like, take a moment and really pause and hear what Viva just said there. Like, really hear what she just said there, because I think all of us, there's times where we could be having a little bit more love and care for ourselves and having that same answer. And I think some people might struggle with having that answer because of a lot of conditioning that tells them not to have that answer that's not true.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank
Thank
you.
you.
Like,
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that.
yeah. Wow. I feel like I don't even want to talk. I just want to sit in that beautiful area of what you said there. I think it's really, really, really important what you said there, and thank you for sharing it. I want to give you an opportunity, as we start to get close to wrapping up, which is always hard when we're having these really, really important, meaningful conversations. So I give you a magic wand. And you get to go into an organization, and you really get to, with that magic wand, start to make some of those systemic changes. And there's going to be people, maybe people and culture leaders, CEOs, people listening to this podcast right now. And I'm a big believer too, you have to start with baby steps. You have to start somewhere, right? But what would you do? What would you do with that magic wand? What do you want to see change more of in cultures?
Oh, I have so much to say about this. The first thing I would say is, like, even if organizations were just actively trying to make their existing values more true, I think that that would do so much, right? So many organizations have amazing missions and values, and they collect proverbial dust because no one checks back in on them, and they become just meaningless words. So that's one thing that I would say. Like, we have such inspiring statements that are already at our fingertips. So that's one thing. The other thing that I would say is in that is that something better can exist if we're willing to invest in it. So like helping people, if I had that magic wand, it's like ding, helping people to know like, no, you don't have to actually be, and I know that's so much of the work that you do through coaching and other things, but you, it doesn't have to be this way, right? There is another way, and there is a way that can bring so many that we can engage in and have collective success for people, collective liberation for people, true equity, right? So that's the other piece. And then the last thing that I'll just say on this, because I've been thinking about it a lot, and my business partner and I have been talking about it a lot recently, is the you see my baby swing in the background, which is why this is on blur here. But the last thing, which is, I've been thinking a lot about Gen Z and Gen Z in the workplace specifically. And I think that we have so much to learn from Gen Z if we were willing and open to it as leaders. And so what I'm seeing and hearing is a lot of just there being a lot of disconnects, generational disconnects in the workplace. And I don't feel like I'm that far off from Gen Z. I mean, I'm like the last year of a millennial. I like to call myself the world's oldest millennial. But there's just something very different with about the way my relationship to technology and the way that the internet did not shape my childhood, right? That is very different from that of Gen Z and like how that's impacted everything else. And so we don't have enough time to unpack that here, but I think that there's a lot around emotional intelligence that we can learn from Gen Z. And I think Gen Z can obviously, you know, there are lots of things about collaboration and work that they can learn from other generations too. But I don't want people to continue to dismiss Gen Z in the way that they have been. Because you, A, you need incoming talent. You're not going to be able to survive as an organization without it. And B, you're doing yourself a disservice, your own evolution, your own growth as a leader, when you do that. So that's the last thing I'll say.
Yeah, I think it's important. Co show up from a place of curiosity and ask more questions because they probably have so much that they want to share. If there could be more listening and less making assumptions and less making statements and judgments.
And so much about exactly, and so much about what they're committed to in terms of equity and inclusion specifically. Like what they're willing to stand by in terms of their values and how they're willing to stand by it, that's the piece that I really want people to walk away with here
Agreed.
too.
That's important. Where can people learn more about you and the work that you're doing in the world?
Sure. So you can visit liberationlabs.co, and it's .co, not com. So I want to say that. And then vivaasmalash.com are a couple of places. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. So that's a good place for people to reach out to me as well. And through Liberation Labs, my partnership with Michael Greger, we also have a Substack blog, so people can feel free to subscribe there too.
Amazing. And we will have all of that in the show notes. Viva, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for making the space, Kristen. I appreciate you, and we'll talk to you very soon, I hope.
And for everybody, wherever you are in the world, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. We're sending tons of love. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Please remember that meaningful change requires space and grace. Practice self-compassion and become the ripple. As you transform yourself, you transform your workplace and the people around you.